A very pleasant good morning to you on this Monday, live from Olympia, with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. I'm your host, Tracy Ellis, with the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. You can email me with your questions, tracy.ellis@ledge.wa.gov. That's tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. Or call 509-826-0100. That's 509-826-0100. And it was a busy week last week in the legislature, but I thought we'd start by kind of a nice story. Representative Abel, you have a page, and maybe explain what pages are for people, but your page is from Tenasket.
I do, yeah. This is pretty exciting. So by way of background, the Washington State Legislature for a very long time, I think over a century, has had what we call the PAGE program. This is a program where young men and women from around the state, ages 14 through 17, come and spend a week here in Olympia, getting a chance to interact with their legislators, the statewide elected officials. They do incredibly important work there in the chamber and around the building. They're part of really what makes this place work. And it's a wonderful opportunity for seeds to be planted with these young folks about maybe potential future service. So just speaking candidly, it's sometimes difficult to get pages from the 7th District because it is so far away. It's the middle of winter. The family has to take care of the arrangements for travel back and forth to Olympia. So it's not easy. It's just a lot easier to get pages from, you know, the Seattle area. But this week, I'm really pleased. We've got a young man from Tenasket. His name is Teek Plank. I actually got a chance to meet his father a couple of weeks ago. I understand Teek is very excited about this. He's fired up. He's extremely knowledgeable. We're going to put him to work. And I'm just excited to see what this week brings about for Teek Plank from Tenasket.
If people are interested in the PAGE program, I'm sure you don't have all the details in front of you, but yeah, it'd be great to give people, you know, maybe a little bit of information here on how to get involved if they'd like their child to do that.
Yeah, again, it's a wonderful program. You can just go ahead and if you Google Washington State Legislature PAGE program, it'll bring up, you know, a wonderful webpage that has got information on the subject. It does provide an option for individuals to request some financial aid. There's some modest financial aid that is available. And that was established a number of years ago because the legislature recognized that it's just harder for certain families, especially in certain parts of the state like ours, to make it to Olympia in the middle of winter. But again, it's a wonderful program. I can't speak highly enough about it. I know we had a couple of pages last session and weren't sure if we're going to get them this session, but very, very pleased and happy that we've got Teek coming to join us for a week.
Senator Short, you are interested in talking about wildfire funding. What's up with that?
Well, as you know, last year's budget just nearly funded half. And this was the results of bipartisan work several years ago. We call it the 1168 bill. And really what that does is funds firefighting, fire prevention, fire preparedness, forest health, you know, to DNR, and significant efforts. And we have seen such a great response. Wildfires are going to keep coming, but we need to make sure we're ready. And so my bill would restore that funding. Really excited to say that the bill has a hearing tomorrow in Ways and Means. And while my bill may not advance, it's important to have it out there. I think ultimately it'll probably be part of budget discussions, but I'm super happy that she's agreed to hear it. And I know there are tremendous efforts this week all across the state to bring attention to this. So I'm really pleased about that.
Representative Engel, what's new with you?
Well, we've got lots of things going on. I got my RadTech supervision bill to help rural hospitals continue to use ARNPs and PAs in their emergency departments got passed out of committee this last week. Had a hearing on the bill I have to reduce regulations for small companies using with gravel pits. I had a great hearing. And tomorrow I've got a bill on my charity or a hearing on my charity care bill to restrict non-emergency care charity care to Washington State residents. The problem we've been having is, particularly in Newport, Washington, right on the Idaho border, a couple of years ago, Washington State Department of Health eliminated the geographical boundaries. So this means that people from Idaho can now come to Newport, Washington, right across the border, and get free health care. And it's causing a lot of problems for them.
I just wanted, for people who may not understand charity care, what that is something that the hospitals are required to provide, right?
That is correct. So in Washington, it has the most generous charity care laws in America. If you're under 300% of federal poverty level, which for my family of six is $122,000 a year. So it's a significant amount of money you can make. And then if you go to the hospital, a hospital is required to waive all those fees, not just for emergencies, but also if you needed a surgery or an MRI or some of these other expensive procedures. But Washington State really just can't afford to bear the healthcare costs for non-emergent procedures for the whole country.
In your other hospital bill, there were a lot of acronyms in there. So I just wanted to, exactly what would that do actually?
So you have what's called advanced practice providers that are, they're not full physicians, but they're ARNP, so advanced registered nurse practitioners and physician's assistants, who have the ability to practice just like a regular physician, but under the supervision of a physician, and they can be the solo practitioner in an emergency department. But this lawyer last summer found this issue in the law and made the case to the Department of Health that they shouldn't be allowed to supervise CT scans with IV contrast. It's a little bit complicated, but basically if you can't do that procedure, you won't be able to save someone's life who comes in with a stroke and other issues as well. So this bill fixes that problem and allows our rural hospitals to continue to operate as they have been for the last 20 years.
You know, we probably don't talk enough about the challenges rural hospitals face, and the challenges are many. I mean, this is something that, again, does not seem to be talked about a lot, but rural hospitals right now are having a hard time, aren't they?
They sure are. They sure are in lots of ways. And, of course, with all the federal uncertainty going on with changes to Medicaid, and we can debate the merits of that, but the reality is that it will be an impact on them. And so they're fearful when they're struggling to make ends meet now. What's going to happen when we make changes at multiple levels? And we have other bills in the legislature now to also add burdens to them with extra requirements.
Where can the legislature help? I mean, Medicaid reimbursement is one thing, obviously, but another regulation, maybe rolling some of that back, and would that help them out?
Absolutely. Well, and that's what my supervision bill that passed out of committee this last week does. That's reducing regulation so they can continue to operate efficiently. If that bill doesn't pass, then they will be required to hire more physicians, which costs more, and often you can't even find them. And you think of a place like Ritzville, that's on the edge of shut down right now, they have an average census of one, which means a lot of your emergency room department shifts, they might not have a single person come in. If you had to staff that with someone who costs twice as much per shift, that's just not sustainable.
Hmm. Representative Abel, we talked about your bill, your family burial bill, a little bit last week, but that did have some movement this past week. What happened with that?
Yeah, it did. This is a neat bill. This is a what we call the family burial ground bill. This idea has been around for a while, and it was had some involvement from our 7th District leadership in the past. What this bill would do is that it would allow individuals, if they so choose, to designate a small part of a privately owned parcel as a family burial ground, which right now it's pretty much impossible to bury someone on private property in Washington State. You can establish a private cemetery, but there are huge financial hurdles to doing so. This bill is designed to eliminate those financial hurdles and allow people, if they want, to be buried on the farm or the ranch. Well, we had a hearing on Friday, and it was one of those really neat hearings. There was a gentleman who came in. His name was Ewing Stringfellow, and Mr. Stringfellow was almost 90 years old. And he'd spent over half a century working on his family farm, and he spoke really beautifully about the work on that farm and his kids being raised on that farm. He had he talked about their raising cattle on the farm and growing trees, and he said, "Why do I want to be buried on the farm?" He said, "With trees, you have roots. With people, you have roots." And it was just really beautiful, and it really drove home the whole point of the bill. There were more than a few eyes that were kind of starting to tear up there in the hearing room. He just really hit a home run, and it was a reminder for me about how important this bill is, because there's a lot of Ewing Stringfellows out there, people who really want to deepen and strengthen the family identification with the property.
Senator Short, this income tax proposal from Senate from legislative Democrats, I should say, seems to be gaining steam here. What's the latest with that?
I have not. It is. I have not seen the language yet, but it is soon to be introduced into the legislative process. And the one thing I will say, you know, everybody talks about this being a millionaire's tax, and this is an income tax, folks. If they're taxing one segment of our society, we are all taxed. One person is taxed. We all are taxed. And interesting thing, you know, they talk about the, you know, the $1 million figure. Well, that's per couple, which means if you're single or you're a business owner, it's $500,000. Very disingenuous. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. The only problem that has occurred in Olympia and the reason we're even here dealing with these budget deficits is because of overspending. We have had plenty of revenue into the state of Washington. What we haven't had is leadership that adopts budgets, really looking at the core priorities of state government and funding those first. And then if there are avenues to do other things within our revenue constraints, then let's talk about those and let's add them. But there's such an insatiable appetite just to spend. And it is a burden. Our current tax system is a burden. And they just want to increase that burden on families. And I'm concerned that should this income tax bill be successful through the legislature, through the courts, and we end up having one, folks, there will be no bounds on how much the state of Washington wants to spend. And I'm just super concerned about that.
Yeah, just tagging along with that, I think it's super interesting that the income tax proposal is being introduced as a proposed statute instead of a constitutional amendment. The political calculus is clear. The other side can't introduce it as a constitutional amendment because they don't have remotely near the votes. Changing our state constitution is appropriately hard. It requires getting big majorities in both houses of the legislature. And the reason for that is because it's really only supposed to happen when there's a broad political consensus about the proposed constitutional change. What's interesting about this approach is that our state Supreme Court for almost 100 years has said that an income tax is unconstitutional. And they're not mincing words about that. What the proponents of this income tax are hoping to do is ram it through as a statutory change and then hope and pray with their fingers crossed that the Supreme Court across the street will change their mind and say, you know what, I know we've held that for 100 years, but there's, you know, new judicial sheriffs in town. We're going to go with something different here. My concern is that they may actually be right. Unfortunately, we've had a lot of turnover in the court in the last 10 years. We've had a number of folks who in their decisions have been lamenting what they see as a Washington state's regressive tax code. They keep talking about that. So the political calculus makes sense that the other side is proposing this as a statute rather than a constitutional amendment. I don't think it's right because plainly it's a constitutional change. They're just hoping that the state Supreme Court is going to allow them to get away with it.
And that's not the only tax increase proposal out there. There's also one for a payroll tax. It's called a head tax. It's the same tax that Seattle charges. That's still alive and well, too, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So that was heard in my committee last week, the Finance Committee. So by way of background, this is House Bill 2100. And what this bill would do is that it would impose a tax on businesses for every employee that they've got being paid over $125,000. This would be taking statewide. Seattle's failed similar tax. And I'll tell you, it was really interesting to me, among other people, the person who worked for the governor as the director of commerce until about 3 weeks ago and now works for the Seattle Roundtable or the Seattle Business Alliance came in and wholeheartedly just condemned this tax. And I think this is fascinating. This is a member of the governor's cabinet about a month ago said this is a terrible idea. But he wasn't the only one. We had people from our district testify and say, look, to be clear, we don't have as many employee positions that get paid $125,000 a year, as does, say, you know, Seattle or Bellevue or Kirkland. But what happens on the western side of the state with the economy over there does impact the eastern side of the state. And it's the same with the other way around. You know, the health and strength of our agricultural sector in Eastern Washington is really critical to our statewide prosperity. So I was really pleased with the local testifiers who made clear that this idea is a terrible idea for a number of reasons. It will adversely impact the health and strength of the entire state. And two, it's just a job exporter. All that's going to happen is that the businesses are going to have the positions that pay $125,000 or more be out of state, and we lose those taxpayers. And that would be sad for Washington.
This is Live from Olympia on Okanagan Country Radio with State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell. Email your questions to tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. That's tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. Or call 509-826-0100, 509-826-0100. It almost seems like a constant battle your district has with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Is that just me? I mean, I've been doing this long enough, and I've certainly been talking with Senator Short long enough. It seems like that's one agency that your district seems to get a bit frustrated with from time to time.
Oh, it's not just from time to time. That goes back to, you know, our former Senator Bob Morton in his time. I remember him going round and round with the Fish and Wildlife Director at the time. And you think of our wildlife, you think of hunting. Hunting is just such an incredibly important part of our district. And so all of those intersect and they come together. And I think the hard part today, and I just don't understand it. It's like science says hands off. At least that's what I'm interpreting, because you never see them do anything on the ground, really. And it seems like to me, as much as they encourage quote unquote citizen science, they really don't give it any value. And they say, well, that just doesn't match, you know, that doesn't match appropriate research, you know, research objectives, whatever. But how many times do you have that person who's hunted for decades know more about the land and what's going on the land than the people who are sitting in Olympia with the degrees? And yet, you know, my push and with the bill, we really want to bring that back to the forefront and say, you know, the folks that are seeing things on the ground, it matters. And they know every inch of it. They see the populations. They see them ebb and flow. And we really need that to count for something. And that's going to be my main discussion with Department of Wildlife, actually, this morning after our radio program. And just really, really get back to doing it collaboratively and together, and understanding that the folks that are out there hunting and hiking and the things that they see are important pieces of information for which Department of Fish and Wildlife should use. So we'll see.
Well, I've got a story from this last week that kind of reiterates that same issue. A couple of months ago, I'd had a meeting with Department of Fish and Wildlife law enforcement officers, and their government affairs people came to Colville and met with me before session and talked about their request to get an increase in funding for their law enforcement department. Their law enforcement has been reduced in size over the last several years, and they said it, you know, be helpful to be able to make sure that the resources are being protected, and they also do mutual aid with local law enforcement. You know, they actually made a pretty good case for why they should get more money going to their law enforcement. But I made a post about it on Facebook with a picture of me and them. Wow, did it blow up. I had 80 comments, mostly negative, people just saying, don't give them any more money. We need to rein this in. Even Joel Kretz commented on there about thinking, well, if we remove two regular people to add one new law enforcement officer, that'd be great. Well, this last week, I was at a Sportsman's Caucus lunch, and they came up to me, and again, they had pushed for their funding increase. And I said, you know, I put this on Facebook, and I had a lot of feedback, and I don't think I can really support this proposal right now. You got to work on building more trust in your agency first. Well, Director Suswin, he's the director of Fish and Wildlife at the state level, he overheard me, and he came over, and he joined the conversation, and he started talking about how he read every comment on my page about this issue. And even was telling the group quotes from the comments that he'd heard. And I think it's an important lesson for, one, for him to get this feedback, but it's also important for our listeners to know that when you comment on a Facebook page or call and let your voice be heard, I'm guessing most people that comment on my page don't think about a state agency director reading those comments and taking them to heart.
Yeah, you know, a lot of negative things are said about social media, and it probably deserves a lot of negative things, but that's a positive right there. It's a way to get people into the town square and for a lot of people to be engaged with that, from the people, the officials at the, really the top of the chain there at Fish and Wildlife, reading your things to just other, you know, people in the community, seeing what's going on. So in that sense, yeah, check out Representative Engel's Facebook page. It sounds like there's all sorts of stuff going on there. This is live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. Speaking of Fish and Wildlife, actually, Representative A. Bell, you and Short, Senator Short, basically have the same bill. Maybe explain how that works. But they're separate bills, but they would do the same thing. And both, I think, are moving right now in the legislature.
Yeah, that's right. So what you can do here in Olympia is you can introduce what they call companion bills, which are basically the same bills in both chambers. And that provides double the opportunity. It's kind of like the old double mint commercials, double mint, come on, double right. It. Right. So double the opportunity. Shelley's laughing. Thank you, Shelley. It gives you double the opportunity to advance the legislation. So if it stalls in the House, maybe it'll still go in the Senate or vice versa. Well, Senator Short and I have introduced companion bills that would really do what Shelley was talking about as far as trying to address the issue of our declining ungulate population. And we have heard about this, from all over the place. Hunters, sports people, folks who go out there and say that our ungulate population of whitetail, elk, moose is declining rapidly. And we know that part of the reason for that is the overabundance of predators. And so House Bill 2221 is designed to address those issues. So what that bill does is that it says if the population of ungulates goes below a certain level, then the Department of Fish and Wildlife is directed to take certain actions with regard to the predator population. And really the beauty of this bill is that the actions that they're directed to take are actions that are already laid out in their own wildlife management plans. But this is the legislature saying as a matter of statute, you shall take these actions. I think this is common sense legislation. I think this is a great way to try and promote the proper management of both types of wildlife, the ungulates as well as the predators. I'm very curious about Fish and Wildlife's further response on this. But hey, we've got enough, wolves, for example, in Northeast Washington to constitute repopulation for the entire state as far as the wolf population is concerned. So
it was interesting when we had the hearing because the folks who were opponents, stated the research that had been done, the ungulate study. And what we've said, folks, is that's a point in time. And yes, you have your section that's kind of your control area with which to, look and see how the population's doing. But the fact is there was very little done in northeastern Washington. They did have, the study was good. I'm not suggesting it wasn't. But their interpretation, or the folks that are opposed to the bill, their interpretation is we need to look at that and say, see, our ungulate populations are doing okay or slightly better. But the thing is, it's not granular. It doesn't get to the ground in terms of the game management units, the areas of the state where really whitetail have really been populated. And that's the kind of information we need going forward. And so I don't have a problem with the study, but I have a problem that this study is suggesting that our ungulates are fine when it's really a point in time. It was really interesting during the hearing because there was unfortunately very little time for questioning. I get frustrated with that. A lot of things get put on the agenda. So the one thing I've asked the department for, and I haven't gotten it yet, is what are those buck-to-doe ratios? What's the fawn recruitment? How are they really doing? But folks, I think about the opposition to translocation into Southwest Washington, and I get it. I do. The department's response has been, well, we don't know if our wolves that are in dry, cold climates are actually going to survive well in wet, warm climates in the state of Washington. And so I'm thinking about that going, huh, really? Well, maybe we just ought to get rid of that fourth region and just call it good. Back to Hunter's comment. So I'm going to press this issue. We have retired the wolf, or we have repopulated the wolves in the state of Washington in our district. And it really comes back to wolves need food. And if there aren't ungulates, they're looking at livestock. And we really need to change that in order to, you know, to help our ranchers maintain their way of life.
Just chiming in on this, you know, there's good news on this bill. Again, we've got the same bill introduced in the Senate and the House. Senator Short's bill had its hearing. We have our hearing on this bill on Friday the 30th at 10:30 in the morning. It's in the Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee. And I would really ask people, if they feel strongly about this, for the folks who are listening, please do testify, you know, remotely. If you're able to make it in person, that would be amazing. I know it's in the middle of winter and there's no easy way to get to Olympia from the 7th District. But even if you can't testify remotely or in person, please do go on the website. And there's a little button you can click to register your opinion pro or con on the bill. I would really ask folks listening to make their thoughts known on this, because we're going to get a lot of people from outside the district make their thoughts known on this. I want the people who live in the 7th District and are actually impacted by this to make their thoughts known on it.
Best part of this bill this year is I never knew until this year that things with antlers were called ungulates. So now I do. And I also, there's a wolf place out in Tenino. Is that where it is? Anyway, a wolf haven, I think, or something. Mm-hmm. And the wolves seem to live fine out there. I don't think I've ever heard that. The wolves from your district may not be compatible with the weather in this district. Was that a surprise to you to hear that?
Well, it is. But I think frankly, it's an excuse. Mm. And, you know, if wolves are the apex predators that everybody says, and we know that they are, then I'm pretty sure they will adjust. I think what it is reticence on the part of the department to even want to go down this road, to even start that work, because they know how much opposition, you know, from folks who don't want wolves, there will be. And so if you talk to ranchers around here, just folks, you know, there's huge elk populations with hoof rot, you know, hoof disease, and all of that. And they're saying, you know, we could probably use a few predators to cull those animals. They say it's actually horrific to watch. They're in tremendous pain. And honestly, it's just about doing right by our folks that have continued to bear this burden alone. And, you know, between us and Southeast Washington, have borne this burden for, you know, nearly 20 years. And it's about time that we do something about it. So to me, these are excuses. They're excuses not to do.
Well, the three of you come over here every year and seem to adjust just fine. So maybe you could help the wolves out, show them how to do it.
If we can do it, the wolves can do it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And coming up on Live from Olympia, we're going to talk initiatives and your questions, which you can email to tracy.ellis@ledge.wa.gov, tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov, or by calling 509-826-0100, 509-826-0100. This is Okanagan Country Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. I'm Tracy Ellis, your host with the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. You can email me with your questions, tracy.ellis@ledge.wa.gov. That's tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. Or call 509-826-0100, 509-826-0100. 0100. And initiatives, a lot of talk about initiatives. First off, an initiative to the legislature. There are two kinds of initiatives that can be filed by people who go out and gather signatures. One to the legislature, one just to the people. This one is to the legislature. That means you all are could be considering this initiative. It is related to boys and girls sports. And the Democrats have indicated that the Democrats who are in control here in Olympia have indicated that they will not be giving this a hearing. So if that were the case, it would just go to voters. But, you know, they could change their minds. I mean, what do you want to see happen with this initiative to the people? First off, Senator Short, why don't you explain what it does, and then we could talk about, you know, the process a little bit.
Well, it frankly protects girls' sports. It says that, you know, boys should not be able to play in girls' sports. I think it makes it very clear there is that difference. And really, for, you know, since time in memoriam, I use that word a lot, but, you know, it's really been important to make sure that our girls and women, you know, have equal opportunities and opportunities to thrive, opportunities to, you know, to just really excel. And, you know, the trans movement, and again, this is not attacking them individually. You know, they're human beings. I want to make that very clear. But you know, just the kind of, you know, medicine and things that trans individuals take to try and help them be someone else, you know, really does not change what they were born with. It does not change the testosterone levels to the point where you have these athletes who are competing with girls and having that unfair advantage. And I just think it sends such a wrong message. Again, this isn't about them individually. I think, frankly, if we're looking at sports in the future, there should be athletic competition for trans athletes in their own division. You know, frankly, I don't see anything wrong with that. But to, you know, to impugn the girls that we have seen as signatures were being gathered, to, you know, make them feel anything less than they are, you know, and opponents of trans people, that's just really, really wrong. That sends such a huge message. If we are as diverse a state as we say, and we believe in strengthening, you know, women's rights and their importance in the workplace, their importance just, again, to be able to excel individually, then what's been happening is wrong. So super excited that the initiative has been certified. Great job to everyone out there who did that. We're going to continue to push for it to be heard and voted on. I think that would be the right thing to do. Again, we're a diverse state. We'll see if the majority party will allow it to be.
Go ahead, Senator, Representative.
Yeah, so just kind of following up on that, you know, the initiative is an incredibly powerful tool that the people have in our state constitution, Article 2, Section 1. We are reminded that the first power reserved by the people is the initiative. And when it's utilized, it's when the people reach forward and grab the steering wheel and say that the legislature is losing their way. And so this is a really powerful tool that the people retain for themselves. I'm very interested to see how this moves forward. But yeah, a lot of signatures delivered on this important issue, and people are very fired up about it.
You know, just having a hearing and even, you know, voting on the initiative, because if the initiative came to the legislature, have a hearing, people get to talk about, you know, why they support it, why they oppose it. And then, you know, if it's voted down, then it would still go to the people for a vote. I guess, why do you think some Democrats are against the idea of even having a hearing for it? Not to ask you to speculate, but
well, no, it really, I mean, I think the quietness of not saying much is we're not sure why. You know, we're not sure why. The other side of the aisle has consistently held itself as frankly, as the party of women's rights. I mean, if we're, you know, just putting it out there, they have been very bold in saying that and expressing that over the years. This is completely counter to that. It's completely counter to it. I think if we're looking at both of our chambers, House and Senate, you know, our roles are to make sure that all voices are heard, right? Whether you agree with a position or not, that's our responsibility as being a member of the legislature in the state of Washington and making sure these voices are heard. And they're squelching these young women who have worked to excel, and they're saying they don't matter. And they're picking and choosing one over the other. And I just get so frustrated with that. We have a lot of room in the state of Washington to do both. And I think it's sad, abysmal, actually, that they're refusing, at least at this point, to hear the bill.
And just following up with Senator Short's comment, I think it is very interesting that they're refusing to hold hearings on this. My sense, of course, I'm not in the other room. I actually don't know what they're doing here. But I think they're trying to play some political chess here. Now, just a quick history review. Not that long ago, we had initiatives that came to the legislature that dealt with the Parents' Bill of Rights. And the Democrats thought they were being clever. What they did is they said, okay, what we'll do is we'll just adopt the Parents' Bill of Rights as presented by the initiative. And then when we come back into session, we're just going to go ahead and gut it, just completely change it back to however we want. And so they did that. And, you know, it actually worked politically from their perspective. I think it was a terrible policy result. And I think it very much undermined the entire, you know, intent of the initiative process. I'm not sure if they feel that they can do that again. Because they did take a lot of political heat for that. And so I think they're trying to figure out other ways to go ahead and try and defeat the idea that's encapsulated in this initiative. But I guess we will wait to see what their plan is with regard to this.
And I think there's some of the nuance here. As Representative Abel says, we had the last parental bill of rights that came to the legislature and was passed and then gutted the next year. We have three options as a legislature here. We can, one, adopt the legislation as proposed by the people. Two, we can send it to the people for a vote and not hold a hearing on it. And third is we can actually have hearings, go through the normal legislative process on any bill, make amendments, and fix the things that we see issues with. Typically, the process for bills is that they get perfected and multiple members get to look at them and propose ideas and make them better. And that's a challenge we don't really have in the normal initiative process. But we can do that. And this is the option that I think we should take, is to give it a hearing, take input from the public, and then we can send two options to the people for a vote. We can send the one that was the signatures were gathered on, and we can send an amended version that we as a legislature can have bipartisan support on, hopefully, and send those, and the people can then decide which one they like better. I think that's what we should do.
Speaking of initiatives, the bill known as the Initiative Killer Bill, I believe, passed out of committee. And so this is a bill that would add some new regulations on the initiative process. And what I'm hearing from a lot of Republicans is that it would make it much too difficult to get an initiative on the ballot, or make it much more difficult, at least, to get an initiative on the ballot.
Sure. It is horrible. This is the second week. We call this initiative killer number two. Over 10,000 people signed and opposed. Thank you for that. It still matters. Yes, the bill has been voted out of committee, but that's one step in the process. We're going to fight this with everything we have. Essentially, this bill would not allow paid signature gatherers. And if you think about the entirety of the state of Washington, the population is a very big state, a lot of people, you know, these signature gatherers have really made a difference in concert with the volunteers. So what this bill would do is just say, well, you got to be back to just using volunteers. And I think, frankly, it would ensure that no initiative would have a chance of going forward. And I really scratch my head over this, because there have been a lot of initiatives on both sides over the years. The Democrats, folks who are maybe more liberal-leaning, you know, have been able to get initiatives through, you know, the state of Washington. We've had our side. Some have tried, especially on the income tax issue. That's failed. The point is the people continue to speak through the initiative process. They may not like what we're doing, or we may not like what they're doing. But the fact of the matter is it comes back to the people. As Hunter said earlier, this really takes it in an entirely bad direction, and I think really thwarts the ability to bring initiatives forward, either to the legislature or to the people. And again, I'm just amazed at folks in the majority to say, we want to stop anybody or any group that thinks differently than we do. I think that's really what it comes down to, the abuse of power to not allow something to be brought forward that might be a difference of opinion on a different issue, and just say that doesn't matter, that we shouldn't have deliberations either through initiative in the legislature with different ideas. That's been our system of governance. That's where strength is in the people. And yes, it is hard, and you do get frustrated. But to just say, we've got such a majority that we just don't want to hear the other side anymore, you know, and that's what this bill says. I mean, they do not want people speaking. And I have to say, just going back to the initiative to the legislature, the one thing we've seen with the Protecting Girls Sports, it's not just a conservative issue. This has been, you know, what we understand with the signatures is probably about half and half of Republicans, Democrats, and Independents. So you really think about it, is it really a partisan issue? You know, should the initiative process be a partisan issue? Should we make it harder for people to be able to bring it forward either to the legislature or to the people? Absolutely not. This is out of control.
Yeah, and on that point, we had a couple of former and current statewide office holders whose jobs are to help administer our elections from both parties who said this should not be a partisan issue. So former Secretary of State Sam Reid called this legislation a voter suppression bill, pretty strong language from former Secretary Reid. And then our current Secretary of State, Steve Hobbs, came out swinging against this as well. So it really says something if the individuals who are in charge of our elections here in the state of Washington and the initiative process here in the state of Washington from both parties are saying this is a bad bill and needs to be rejected. That's actually a heartening development. I wish the Senate committee that heard that had taken it to heart. But I think it's an indication of the opposition that this bill is generating.
Yes, Secretary Reid, a Cougar and a Republican, and Secretary Hobbs, a Husky and a Democrat. Yeah. Those two don't get together on anything.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, another thing that sometimes is brought up are emergency clauses on Democrat bills. It seems like more and more Democrat bills have them. So we mentioned the initiative to the people, initiative to the legislature. There's also another option is the referendum. So after the legislature passes a law, if you get enough signatures, you can basically put that same law in front of voters and have them give them a chance to either give a thumbs up or thumbs down on it. But if an emergency clause is on a bill, that kind of, well, it definitely means that it can't be a referendum, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And so do you think that's one of the reasons why we see so many emergency clauses on bills?
Absolutely. It really goes forward that we, you know, we're governing, we have control, and our word should be the final word. And I think, again, it just gets to just how out of control, you know, the majority is in right now. I mean, to say, again, to just squelch the ability to have different points of view, to have faith, to put it to the voters. And really, folks, in our jobs, we take votes all the time, and we're responsible for sharing why we voted a particular way with our constituents. And to me, this kind of thing is no different. This is about balance. And this is about making sure that the most important people, you, the people, are heard and have a significant voice. And those emergency clauses just take that away.
Representative Engel, you have a bill. You're calling it the Veterans Bill, but what would that do and why is it important? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative A. Bill.
No,
my apologies.
That's all right. Yeah. So this is a bill I'm very proud of. This is actually my second charge up the hill on this bill. This is the bill that would reorganize the Veterans Affairs Advisory Committee. And it's a bill I'm very happy to support. What it does is it takes the committee that advises the governor on veterans issues and reorganizes it to provide for some at-large members who are picked based on their military experience and personal qualifications and background. It also reorganizes some of the seats that are currently filled by our wonderful veteran service organizations, our VSOs. And then it also reorganizes some of the seats that are represented by some of our veterans. We've got two veterans homes here in the state of Washington. Well, this bill came up last session in 2025, a year ago, and it passed out of the House but got stuck in the Senate. And I spent some time over the summer working with some folks on the bill, and I think actually we got the bill to an even better spot. And very happy to say that last week it passed out of the House unanimously. Which, you know, that there's certainly never any guarantee of that. And, you know, very frequently we'll have, you know, opposition from, you know, across the aisle for any number of different reasons. But this bill sailed over to the Senate, and I've been speaking with the the appropriate senators over there to try and help clear the way. But bottom line, if this makes it through the Senate and gets it to the governor's desk, it's going to be an improvement in this committee, and it's going to be a step in the right direction for the veterans community here in Washington.
people have, a lot of people have noticed that their homeowners insurance has gone up lately. I don't know if your bill, Senator Short, that deals with homeowners insurance will make any difference in that scenario, but I know you have one, and why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Well, it does two things, and Senator Warnock and I have been working really hard on this bill and working with stakeholders, taking comment, working with the insurance commissioner, but it does two things. The first is how many folks have either lost their insurance or had it go up tremendously high and not hear anything from your insurance company as to why. This bill would change that. It would say that they're required to share with you why. When they start talking about wildfire risk, especially, that's really where this comes down from. I think policyholders have a right to know. Again, we, in good faith, you know, have these policies. We pay, you know, the monthly premiums, and at some point, expect there to be communication. So this bill does that. The second thing it does is said, look, if you as a homeowner have done things to help reduce wildfire risk, if communities through FireWise programs have done the same, fire districts, the state, everybody working together to minimize fire risk, there should be consideration of that when the insurance companies decide what the rates are going to be as they work with the insurance commissioner. I am really happy about that piece. That is a huge deal when we think of all the efforts that property owners do and our fire districts and our communities do. Really, there should be credit for that, because at the end of the day, if we're reducing wildfire risk, then that helps the insurance companies too, which is one of their huge issues right now of staying solvent. So I'm hopeful. We've heard, as you might expect, a lot from the insurance companies. We're working through these things. This is just a first bite at this huge issue. I have continued to receive emails from constituents. One in Okanagan County actually said they had their insurance canceled right in the middle of fire season. And I know that there's significant risk and significant payouts that the insurance companies are making. We're not California. We are going to have wildfire. But again, that speaks to the importance of the wildfire funding and restoring that and making sure the state's doing its part.
Yeah, I guess people sometimes don't realize that the connection between wildfires and home insurance, but it's huge, right? I mean, that's a huge part of it for these insurance companies.
It is. And they'll tell you that actually, ironically, the biggest threat to them or in terms of wildfire risk is actually in the urban communities where houses are really close together. But the majority of what we've seen in terms of cancellations and increases has actually been in our rural communities. So I'm still trying to figure out that one. Haven't been able to ferret out why exactly the case. But that doesn't take away from our responsibility to do our part as homeowners and things. So I'm excited and honored to work on this issue. It's a huge issue affecting, you know, everyone in the state of Washington.
About 5 minutes left, less than that now. What are some things that we should look forward to this week and or dread, I guess, depending on your perspective, things that we'll be talking about maybe on the show next week?
Well, I'll chime in just kind of about the general flow of a short session. So for those who haven't been over here, again, this is a short session, so it's only 60 days. And so the joke is that we do the same amount of work in half the amount of time. So it's a real quick sprint. And we are rapidly approaching the various cutoffs on the calendar. So I don't think it's this week, but I think, is it next week?
It's February 4th.
February 4th. So coming up pretty quickly, we reach the first cutoff where bills have to make it out of the policy committee if they're going to advance at all. Now, if it's a financial impact, they can still move it later on throughout the session. But what that means is that if these bills don't have hearings within the next week and a half, whatever it is, coming up pretty quick, then they're likely not going to advance this session. So you're starting to see the frequent scrambles for hearings. You're starting to get the increased urgent communications of, is this going to get a hearing this session? I know I'm doing it with some of my bills. I know legislators in both chambers are doing it. But, again, if you view it as like an analogy of kind of like a river, we're into the fast moving current now. It's going to go. It's going fast now.
Well, and if you think about it, when we get into a 60-day session, generally there's 3 weeks of bill hearings. You think, oh, 3 weeks, that's 21 days. That's not bad. Well, folks, it depends on how many times a week your committees meet. And so for us in Senate Ag and Natural Resources, we meet twice a week. That's six. That's six sessions to hear bills, work on bills, and potentially vote them out of committee. So it really, really limits the time. And, you know, sometimes you'll bring, a really big bill out to just kind of start the process, to get a feel for whether there's going to be a lot of opposition, who's for it, who's against it, who's willing to work on it. And so there are those bills that you know, we know aren't going to potentially advance this session. But the other thing that's really, really hard when we see the number of bills that we've had introduced, there's very little time to be deliberative and really think about what do these bills actually do and who do they really impact. And that's a frustration for me in a 60-day session.
Well, and this is where the committee chairs really matter, too. So again, you know, stating the obvious, Senator Short, Representative Engel, and I are all in the minority in both of our chambers. We don't control the committees. And so the committee chair is going to come forward and say, you know, here's the top three, five, seven bills from our caucus's perspective. It's very difficult to get minority time in that context.
Well, next week, same time, same channel. You can join us for Live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell. It's heard every Monday at this time on Okanagan Country Radio. I'm Tracy Ellis with the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. And I hope that you have a great day today. And by the way, go Hawks. Seahawks in the Super Bowl. That's one thing everybody in our state can agree on is very exciting. Have a great day.